This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And it's Monday, my friends. Let's roll up the sleeves and get started. You'll need an umbrella over much of the state today. And then, well, after that, I've got some bad news. After that, it's called the polar vortex. Yeah, don't look at me. I didn't make the damn thing. It's the polar vortex, all right? And it's coming in a few days. And according to AccuWeather and others, it's going to plunge much of the central and eastern United States. That's you and me and, well, everybody around us. Into unseasonably cold weather, as much as 25 or 30 degrees below normal. Normal is about 51 or 52. You can do the math. Oh, the daytime highs are 51 or 52. Lows could be in the single digits. There could be snow in your future. It doesn't start until this coming weekend. But according to AccuWeather's long-range meteorologist, this vortex is going to drop from Ontario, come plant itself right here on Michigan, and it's going to be, well, it's going to be something, apparently. And I don't think you're going to like it all that much. That's my guess. You're not going to like it all that much. It's going to be pretty cold, in fact. I want to share this next piece. Because a legend from Michigan has left us. If you take out your Rand McNally, you'll note that the Upper Peninsula is a long piece of land, over 300 miles, and thickish in places. It is about 30% of Michigan's landmass, but contains only 3% of its population. Growing up in northern Michigan, I was early on mystified by the Upper Peninsula, even before I traveled there. In the 1960s, I went up a number of times, and it did not cease to mystify me with its wildness. While camping, I would study maps to try to figure out where I was, other than within a cloud of mosquitoes and black flies, that irritating species that depends on clean water, of which there is a great deal in the UP. There is little or no industry, therefore you could drink the water directly from Lake Superior. At least I always did, on my long beach walks. There was a place near Grand Marais of nearly 60 miles of undisturbed beach. No people, no dwellings, just beach and water. It was written by Jim Harrison. Jim Harrison died over the weekend at the age of 78 at his Arizona home. A friend of his, novelist Philip Caputo, a Marine-turned-writer, described the scene of his friend's death in a heartfelt Facebook post. We found him on the floor of his study where he'd fallen from his chair, apparently from a heart attack. He died a poet's death, literally with pen in his hand while writing a new poem. Harrison was the author of more than 35 books, including Legends of the Fall, which, of course, was an incredible film with Brad Pitt, Aidan Quinn. Caputo, a former Chicago Tribune reporter who won a Pulitzer Prize for his work, called Harrison one of the greats of American literature, arguably the last of a breed of American writers who lived hard but well. His wife, Linda, died just last September. He did not survive long without her. Jim Harrison was 78 years old, and he is a legend. If you like to read well-crafted poems, I think he did something like 21 books and then several books of poetry and so forth and some books of essays as well. One of his more recent novellas, Brown Dog, I read. Brown Dog, like liquor and ladies and the pursuit thereof. Brown Dog wouldn't fit in very well in today's world. He's not politically correct. But he's pure. And he's honest. And was a true Michigan character. So I tip my hat today to Jim Harrison. A man that I consider to be a Michigan legend. If you're not familiar with him, you should be. Monday again. Like I said, looking at some of the headlines from the weekend. Bernie Sanders swept through Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington over the weekend. A threefer, a clean sweep of all the Democratic voting states over the weekend. It means he's won five out of the last six. Five out of the last six have gone to Bernie Sanders. And yet, the establishment still doesn't take him seriously. Apparently, in order to overcome the rigged system, which is, of course, that the superdelegates have already nodded for Hillary Clinton even before the process began, Sanders will need to win 67%. 67% of the remaining delegates and uncommitted superdelegates through June to clinch the Democratic nomination. So far, he's winning 37%. There were 162 delegates at stake over the weekend. Washington with 101. Hawaii had 25. Alaska, 16. The Vermont senator won 55 delegates compared to 20 for Clinton. However, more will likely be allocated to Sanders in several weeks when the Washington Democratic State Party releases vote shares by district. And he didn't just win. No, he didn't just win. Sanders won Alaska with 81% of the vote. He had 68% of the vote in Hawaii and 73% he took in the state of Washington. These weren't scratched out victories for Bernie Sanders. These were absolute blowouts. Absolute blowouts. Well, speaking of blowouts and disappointment, you may have noticed that from the Midwest bracket of the NCAA tournament, a 10 seed, the bracket that Michigan State was so highly thought of when the tournament began before losing to Middle Tennessee in that opening round shocker, a 10 seed Syracuse advances out of the Midwest. All right, we're going to take a break here for a moment. Look at some more of the headlines and some of the things going on here around the state and around the country, right here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
All right, welcome back to it. Yeah, I was talking about Sanders' big momentum push. But is it going to mean anything? Probably not. But, you know, let's hear what Bernie had to say about it. He was talking about the future because there are some big prizes still to come, and he thinks he's going to do well in places like Wisconsin and California. Let's roll with it. Clip one. Go.
Momentum is about a week ago having 14,000 people out at a rally in Salt Lake City. And 15,000 out in Seattle, Washington last night. Momentum and energy is about, at this point in our campaign, having rallies and town meetings that have brought out almost 1 million Americans. And what momentum is about is in election after election, winning the overwhelming percentage of young people who are participating. And by young, I don't mean just the very young. The older you get, the younger the age appears. And I'm talking about winning by sizable margins, people 45 years of age or younger, the future of America.
There you have it, Bernie Sanders, the future of America. Socialism, apparently the future of America, at least in Bernie's estimation. It is frightening, isn't it? Doesn't that scare the daylights out of you that somehow we educated people into believing that socialism, or we didn't educate people about the perils of socialism? Apparently we missed that. Here's a little something from the Republican side, by the way, from a Quinnipiac University national poll released just a couple of days ago. I hadn't seen this. It surprised me. It may surprise you as well. The results indicate that unifying Republican opposition to Donald Trump would be nearly impossible, and Trump would lead either Ted Cruz or John Kasich in a two-way race, according to the results from that poll. Asked who they would like to win the GOP nomination, 43% of those asked said they wanted Trump to emerge as the choice, followed by 29% for Cruz, 16% for Kasich, 9% remain undecided. In a head-to-head match between Trump and Cruz, with Kasich voters reallocated, Trump cruises to victory by 9 points. 46% to 37%, 12% undecided, though. The Texas senator drew some slim advantage among Tea Party supporters, but that's where it ended. With Cruz supporters shifting to their second choices, Trump would have a large lead. 56% said they would vote Trump, just 25% for Kasich. Kasich needs to leave the race. See, this notion that somehow he is the alternative to go to when there's a floor fight in Cleveland at the convention, if that happens. This notion that somehow Kasich would take... Now, listen to me. I liked Kasich for a period of time. And I know. You guys think he's too liberal. It's easy. The point is, Kasich has a unique resume. No, seriously, you back there, relax. Kasich does have a unique resume. 18 years in Congress. Helped balance the budget, Foreign Relations Committee. Two-time governor of the state of Ohio, a must-win state. Can't win it all without Ohio. And yet he's turned out to be a predictable politician who doesn't know when to get out of the race, apparently. He's nothing but a spoiler, and maybe he's being helped out by the establishment, if you will. The phone number here, if you'd like to check in on this Monday, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Steve is on the line, checking in to start the week. Steve, welcome to it.
Good morning. A couple of things. John Kasich, maybe he's drinking some of his own Kool-Aid. That's why he won't get out. But the
maybe.
Bigger thing I've got is this business of them telling us, that is the pollsters telling us, that head-to-head, Ted Cruz can beat Hillary Clinton, but Donald Trump can't.
Is nonsense.
That's exactly what I'm trying to glean out of all this information.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I was just on the road this past week. I was traveling. I was in Georgia all of last week doing the show from North Georgia, and then Atlanta. And I met lots of people along the way. I am surprised at the depth and width of the support for Donald Trump all over this country. I mean, I had dinner with different people, talked to different people, talked to some people from Florida, talked to people from Georgia. People from Georgia and Florida, by the way, some of them, former Obama supporters, former Obama voters,
yeah,
by their own admission, saying, we're going with Trump. So I don't know who's measuring where, because these are unprovoked comments. Go on.
The other thing, too, that we never get to see is when they come up with these polls, you never get to see the questions.
That's true.
So it's not that you ask the question, it's how you ask the question.
That's extremely important, Steve. You're exactly right, buddy. I got to run. Always good information. Always appreciate you checking in. Now, if you're looking for room to grow, a new home in the country might be right for you, but with so many construction choices, how do you know which options offer you the best value? Well, you need to check out Greenstone FCS. Greenstone will teach you how to get the best home construction price you can get. Greenstone will help you with industry experts covering a range of subjects, how to make selections that add value to your home, how to be your own contractor, and how to get the very best deal possible. That's what Greenstone is all about. And I've been a customer for a very long time. I appreciate Greenstone. They're primarily a Michigan company, but they dabble a little bit elsewhere, but pretty much they're one of ours. Greenstone's a good company. Go ahead and check them out. Also today, the Michigan 529 program is making sure it happens right here, making sure your kids and grandkids get the education they need. To learn more, go to savewithmi529.com. It's Monday. Welcome to it. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world.
Welcome back to it. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Greatly appreciate your support on this Monday. A lot of things to cover today. Big weekend, like I said, for Bernie Sanders, sweeping Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington. New polls showing Donald Trump solidifying his lead in a variety of places. People continue to say that he can't win when he continues to win, so who knows? Me and of course, Barack Obama out there hanging out of the ball game while Brussels suffers through what could arguably be called their 9-11. Their 9-11. With me, Alan Sachs, the professor here today. Professor, welcome to it.
Good morning. I think the major news story is one that has been covered, of course, in the news, but should be the big headline. Something like 72 Christians in Lahore, Pakistan, and over 300 were injured in a bombing on Easter Sunday, I believe in Lahore, Pakistan. And they were targeted by an offshoot of a Taliban group. There are so many offshoots everywhere. And I don't know why we just say that we're trying to declare war on ISIS and defeat them. There are so many Islamic terror groups all over the world, whether it's the Taliban or whether it's Al-Qaeda or whether it's Boko Haram or whether it's Al-Shabaab and probably a dozen other names out there. And yesterday in Pakistan, Christians were targeted specifically on Easter Sunday. And 72 people killed, including many children.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, what's interesting about this, it's a mostly Muslim country.
That's right.
Has a small Christian community, maybe 2% or less of the population. And they just get annihilated. I mean, it's reprehensible. And people like John Kerry can barely say that there's a genocide against Christians in the Middle East, and you see attacks like this.
Exactly. I'm still amazed that the Christian church in America and the Western world is not more outspoken and loud about this. You know, I can easily understand now, and this sounds very dramatic, when the Holocaust against the Jews in Europe during World War II was taking place, a lot of people said, why didn't more people speak up? I can understand because we have another Holocaust beginning to roll across various parts of the a Muslim world against Christians now, and you don't hear very much about it. Once in a while, there's a news article, but I think people are much more worried about the Final Four in basketball.
Yeah, well, you know, and the other thing is, and there's a lot of truth to that, but let's be honest, the American news media is woefully inadequate when it comes to covering foreign events. I mean, if you travel abroad, you'll find the coverage of news worldwide from the BBC or others is far more robust and professional than the American news media.
I think what they believe here, and I'm not privy to it, of course, is that they think the American public just is not interested in what's going on in Pakistan or anywhere else, and they want to give us a lot of entertainment news, and that's exactly what they're giving us. And, of course, the battle between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump is just perfect fodder for the mainline news media.
No question about that. And yeah, you know, and it's disappointing, Professor, because you're right. There is this it's a Holocaust, for lack of a better term, that's going on, and you were right about this, against Christians. I mean, how many Christians are left in Syria or Iraq or any of these places anymore?
And it's a terrible thing that is ongoing. And again, it's not just ISIS. It is it's like a fountain out there. It's like if you see a big water fountain and spigots are going off in every direction, and that's what it is. It's Islamic extremism, and it's taking maybe 100 different forms, but it's not just ISIS out there. ISIS just broadcasts a little bit more their cruelty, but the same thing goes on. A lot of people used to say in the news media, Al-Qaeda believes that ISIS is too terrible. Oh, so just driving planes into buildings is bad, but it's not as bad as what ISIS does. I mean, these kind of comparisons are just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's reprehensible,
that's
frankly.
Right.
But is anything going to change? I mean, how can you expect anything to change when, after a terrorist attack in the center of Europe, in the heart of Europe, the president of the United States, the alleged leader of the free world, the alleged leader of NATO, instead of stopping his trip, goes to a baseball game with a dictator and does the wave.
And does the tango a little bit later on in Argentina.
Yeah, we know that Americans now died there. Right. Americans died in that attack. And the question then becomes, okay, if the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, can't act the adult in the room, why should Americans pay attention? He gives the signal, if you will. He gives the signal that there is nothing to concern yourself with here.
And John Kerry, the Secretary of State, was asked that question, and his reply was, well, you cannot interrupt diplomacy in that part of the world. It must keep going. Oh, I wonder what kind of great diplomacy was done at the tango dancing in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Yeah, that's it's mind-numbing, isn't it, that we go through this. All right, so let me ask you this. Okay, so Obama does this. It means nothing because it'll never affect anything that he does, and the people that like him will be unaffected by it. They don't care. Meanwhile, going forward, Bernie Sanders picks up 3 over the weekend. People might start to care about this. Bernie picked he's actually won 5 out of the last 6.
If Hillary did not have the superdelegates, it would be a pretty close race in the Democratic side. And Bernie may also do fairly well in New York, although Hillary Clinton claims that's her state, and she may be right. She was a U.S. senator from there for some time ago, and they have a big operation there. But other places may be Bernie's territory as well, Wisconsin, and other states to come up, California perhaps. It's interesting. And now I think Bernie is finally getting into gear. He thinks that he can take the nomination, and so he's starting to actually attack Hillary Clinton by name, which was never done before. He was afraid of her, I think, before. But now he looks like, by gosh, I'm able to take it. So he's been criticizing a fundraiser that Hillary Clinton is going to have, or maybe has already have, with George Clooney sponsoring it. And I think it's thousands and thousands of dollars for a couple for admittance. And so Bernie Sanders is beginning to attack her on that particular issue about raising money, because he brags about his average contribution is about $27. And she's having this huge fundraiser sponsored by George Clooney.
In fact, Bernie's calling it obscene.
That's right. Yeah, and that's interesting, because he never would have done that about a month ago. Now I think he's sort of feeling his oats.
So what are you thinking? Are you really thinking that he feels that he can pull something off here?
I think he does. And some of the delegates may actually, some of those superdelegates may change their mind and go to Bernie if they think that Bernie has a chance. I still don't think he does. And the hard money, I think, is still on Hillary Clinton. But nobody believed that Bernie Sanders would do this well. And I certainly did not. I think that's as big of a story as a Donald Trump story, is the emergence of Bernie Sanders as a challenge to Hillary Clinton.
You know, you're probably right. You know, and here's the thing about Bernie. You know, Hillary's failure in 2008 was written off to a once-in-a-generation candidate.
That's right.
But Bernie Sanders is still, to many people, a second-tier, lackluster senator who's giving her all she could possibly hope
Absolutely.
For, and then some. He's won 5 out of 6. I'll give you the last word.
And yet the Republicans are killing each other and rolling around in the dirt, and they have a chance, they have a good chance, at least they did, of defeating Hillary Clinton. And they're going to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. That's my favorite statement of all time.
There you go. Professor, have a wonderful
Thank
week.
Thank you so much. I
there
appreciate
it.
Sir.
Professor Alan Sachs on a Monday on The Steve Gerber Show. We'll be right back.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
All right, welcome back to it. Monday here on the program. So I was having this conversation. I shared this last week a little bit, but if you didn't hear it, I'll refresh your memory. I was having this conversation with a well-educated, hardcore liberal. And I made a comment to her following the Michigan primary when Bernie Sanders had won, congratulating her. And she got kind of snarky about it and said, well, why would you assume that I voted for Bernie? Well, you're quite a liberal. She goes, but anyhow, the gist of the whole conversation in the end was, well, then tell me the difference. I mean, if you didn't vote for Bernie, then you voted for Hillary. I mean, everybody knows. It's not exactly a secret, nor do you keep it a secret that you're a hardcore leftist. So if you didn't vote for Bernie and you voted for Hillary, what difference does it make anyway, was my comment, because tell me the difference between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Of course, she made a few excuses and, you know, and took some shots at Republicans, never answered the question. Then her final excuse was, this has been, you know, however long it's been, 2 weeks or more now, that, well, she was on her phone. As soon as she got to a computer, she would explain to me the difference between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and their policy positions, because they're so obvious. Because they are so obvious. Well, my theory then, my premise then is the same as it is today. There is little or no difference policy-wise between Hillary Clinton, a Democrat, and Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist. And the difference between socialism and communism is communism comes by way of force and enslaves people. Socialism comes by way of voters who vote to enslave themselves. The difference, well, there isn't any damn difference. Anyhow, here's a little, here's an article I found on the Libertarian Republic to talk more about this, and I'm just going to quote a little bit here. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders may not have a monopoly on socialism in the Democratic Party after all. Mrs. Institute senior fellow Mark Thornton argues that his opponent Hillary Clinton is still a socialist, just a bit less, and he means a very bit less. Bernie is the most socialist, but he's not far off from Hillary, said Thornton in an interview recently. So whoever gets elected, there isn't much of a difference. Meaning that my premise was right about this. Socialism is mainly defined as collective or governmental ownership of the economy. There is some debate over whether the control could be limited to just fundamental economic functions or whether it has to expand to the greater economy. Democratic socialism adds to the theory that systems should be in place to allow the public to voice how they believe the economy is controlled. That's really what democratic socialism is. They want more government in our lives. Bernie Sanders is just a more honest version of that. The views of Clinton and Sanders differ only really in slight nuance. Sanders, for instance, supports a $15 minimum wage at the federal level. Clinton says it should not exceed $12 an hour unless the states decide otherwise. She supports making college more affordable while he wants it to be free. But of course, she offered free tuition as well just recently. They both oppose the Pacific Free Trade Deal, which was recently negotiated by President Barack Obama. They also both advocate for putting more regulations on banks and private businesses and say unions need more power. They also believe social services like retirement benefits should stay in government control because they've proven to be so good with your money. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. Let the government take care of it. Hey, we'll take care of your money. It'll be right here waiting for you whenever you need it. Yeah. Thornton also adds that many Republicans aren't much better. No kidding. No one is talking about addressing the fundamental problem of Social Security or arguing against the national debt. It's only minor scrimmages on that front. Exactly right. Unfortunately, exactly right. Many Republicans are no better. You're not dealing with a national debt of $20 trillion for which you have no idea, no concept whatsoever how to pay for now or ever, nor do you care, it seems. And in 10 years hence, if the national debt isn't reduced or arrested soon, 10 years from now, the third biggest item on the agenda will be interest on the national debt. That's just 10 years from now. So you want to talk about roads or infrastructure or social programs? Doesn't matter. The third biggest item after entitlements, which are number one, and defense, which is a distant number two, will come number three, interest on the national debt that politicians on all sides have allowed to occur on their watch. On their watch. Mm-hmm. Here's a little cautionary tale for you before we go to the break here. Two people were arrested on suspicion of manslaughter after a 7-year-old girl died in Britain over the weekend when the bounce house she was playing in was swept away by strong gusts of wind. The inflatable attraction flew over trailers in a park and landed at the bottom of a hill. Summer Grant from Norwich was treated at the scene and taken to the hospital by air, but she was unable to be saved. A freak gust of wind that caught everyone unaware, said Ray Smith, a representative of the Showman's Guild of Great Britain. It actually pulled the safety stakes right out of the ground. A 27-year-old man and 24-year-old woman from the firm that runs the Bounce Castle were arrested on suspicion of manslaughter by gross negligence. Neither has been identified. Both were later released on bail. Those bounce houses, if they get caught in the wind, I've seen them tumble before, but this one claimed a life. Sad, sad, terrible, terrible story. It's Monday. Glad to have you on board. It's wet out there over much of the state. It's been a soggy, early spring-like weekend here in the state, as you well know. I'm Steve Gruber. We'll be right back.